this summer, and they realized like, oh, it's nice, it's a nice experience, you had a good production. The next steps will now, let's start planning. And planning means, are we going to move extra pots if you're been planting in containers, or if you are in a community garden and say, oh, I would like to try something else.
Yeah.
At the moment, the first thing will be is like get to know your space. So you already have some experience for this season. Yeah. So your space, how big, how small it is, how you can expand, how much pots and soil, potting soil you will need for the next year. And then you will start growing more vegetables and making a list of the vegetables you really like to eat. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to start with vegetables that you eat. Because if you don't like eggplants, there's no reason to grow eggplants. If you don't like the taste of Swiss chard, which is a bit like dirt taste, you are not going to grow that. So let's focus on things that you really like to eat, and you start growing, start with that. So space, vegetables, and the next will be, okay, so usually as a novice gardener, you say, oh, October is arriving, and the gardening season is closing, and because November arrives with cold, rain, and plants really don't grow. So use this time between November and February next year to identify and how you like to grow. So give it a purpose for your gardening. And so you're going to grow herbs, you're going to grow vegetables, and then what you're going to do with these vegetables as well. So you want to eat themselves, you want to share, things like that. And if, for instance, oh, this year you had a good tomato year, and so next year you would like to grow more tomatoes for doing some canning or drying in the sun. So then you start writing it down. So when the next year arrives, March, February, March, you have a clear idea where you have to go. And the other thing is, how good was the experience of being constant in the garden, visiting frequently, watering? It has been very hot these days. And that's during your lifestyle, that give you time to do some gardening. So as well, we have to think that plants don't take breaks. Plants don't have weekends. So they will need watering, they will need tending and caring. So we gardeners have to give time for that. So that's very much like, I need to put some time and commitment so for my garden to succeed. So at the moment, we know that we can grow here in SFU, we grow around 35 different vegetables.
Right.
So that's
a lot.
It's a lot.
And they're all on sort of different schedules and need different tending and needs.
Correct. So, for instance, in the spring, March, we will start with all the leafy greens. So all including cabbage, broccolis, and cauliflowers, kale. And then by mid-May, 1 week of May, we already start our summer crops.
Yeah.
And by the beginning of September, we start our fall crops. So, which are fall crops? Is the crops that like a spring, lots of greens, leafy greens. And if you by then you decide to go into winter gardening, you make sure that by the end of October you have all your root vegetables in the ground. So when winter arrives, your vegetables are in there. So you start making a schedule what you like. So 35 different vegetables is a lot. It's not just carrots and kale. There are lots of radishes and lettuce and mushrooms and spinach and arugula. You name it. As well, West Coast seeds. I don't work with it for them, but they have an awesome garden guide. That all in the garden center you can go and have a copy and use this time of winter time, fall time, to read about that, read a bit of the description of the plants in there and get a hand of what kind of vegetables are in there. So as I said, 35 different vegetables is a lot to decide from and to choose from.
But I guess one of the advantages of planning for a variety of plants to grow is that, of course, when they come to harvest, you have that variety. You're not stuck with tons of one thing more than you can use or more than you want to eat every day for 2, 3, or 4 weeks.
That's right, yes. So besides that is, yeah, don't plan the same thing too much because at the end of the day, you won't be able to eat too much. So yeah, having a garden with diverse garden and dynamic. So diverse means lots of vegetables, yep. And dynamic because each vegetable grows at different speed. Yep. So for instance, the first one to harvest could be arugula and mushrooms, followed by radishes, spinach. And if you're into carrots, you really have to wait for carrots, mm-hmm. and radishes and cabbages. Cabbages take three months, 12 weeks. So it's like, yeah, it's a long wait. So, yeah, having a variety in the garden as means is our diet as well as kind of mm-hmm. a diverse diet. Yeah.
One thing well, a few weeks ago we were in the learning garden with your latest cohort, and you showed us that little planning grid or I don't know what you template.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
the square foot gardening, which yes. I thought was really just a really instructive way of visualizing both how you would go about, you know, some intensive gardening like that, but also helping you visualize what you can actually do, the different plants. Maybe mm-hmm. you could describe a bit about what that
yes.
what that template is and,
yeah,
and how people would use it.
So here in our cohort, we encouraged to use the square foot gardening approach, which is an approach designed for the smaller spaces. Mm-hmm. And we want to optimize the space that we have. Yeah. Could be a 4x4 foot garden bed, or could be a 12 inches pot for growing vegetables. And what we have is that with the square foot gardening, you plant a certain number of plants in a square.
Yeah.
So this the template that we have in the other day describing what is called a seeding square.
Mm-hmm.
So in this square, which is 1 foot by 1 foot square, we can grow 16 carrots.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so as you mentioned, I plant 2 squares, now I have 32 carrots. And all those carrots will come in at the same time, it will grow at the same time, we'll be ready to harvest at the same time. So now it makes us think, I'm able to eat all these 32 carrots in a short time mm-hmm. period. Again, radishes goes in that. If you are into radishes, yeah, 16 radishes. And this as well helps us to link with what we see in the supermarket.
Yeah.
For instance, in the supermarket, you go to the vegetable section and you see how many carrots come in a bunch.
Yeah.
So we have around 3 to 4 carrots depending on the size. And that is a bunch that you buy for a week.
Yeah.
And you garden, you have 16 growing at the same time. So you have already 4 bunches.
Right.
Yeah. And, okay. So now you start thinking, oh, I cannot eat 4 bunches. So you have already a month of carrots in your garden,
yeah.
just in one square. So this square foot gardening is great because the system already have classified the vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So the already beets is 9, spinach is 9 in a square, kale, cabbage, and broccoli is 1 in a square because they become big plants. Tomatoes, we have 2 in a square, so 2 squares, 1 plant.
Yeah.
So here we have 4 square feet, and there is like, oh, and we only put 1 plant because otherwise the plant tends to overtake the box.
Yeah.
That is the square foot gardening approach. There is a square template, and now as well we have a circular template.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a 5-gallon of container, you very much can use that template to grow your vegetable. So the middle size, I talk about the beets. The small plants are the carrots and radishes, they are 16.
Mm-hmm.
Lettuces, they are mid-size, they are 4 in a square.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 lettuces in a square. It again leads us to how many lettuces I eat a week. So to this system with the square foot gardening as well is that each square will be a different crop.
Mm-hmm.
So that I force you to stop and say, if you follow the square foot gardening, each square is a different crop. So you have diversity. Everything grows in a different speed. It's dynamic. And because they are so diverse, not everything gets infected by diseases and pests. So if you have radishes and suddenly there is the white cabbage butterfly laying eggs, those radishes would be a food for the, for the caterpillars. But the lettuces and carrots, they will be just happy growing next door. Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I found, Like I say, with the what do you call
the seeding template.
Seeding template. Yeah, yeah. You know, is it, like I say, it really helps you visualize how much you're going to grow. Because you know, I hear you talk about the numbers, but seeing it on the template, and really, even if you're talking about just a few containers on your patio, if you live in an apartment, you actually can grow quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to you know, apply yourself and do the planning you're talking about.
Yes, you can grow a lot of food, and of course, as well, it's not just growing the food, but as well, every gardener, in order to start a garden, needs seeds.
Yeah.
And so if you read at the back of the seed or the packet, it says make a drill and you sprinkle your seeds, and later you have to thin them up, remove the ones that you don't want and keep the ones that you want at a certain distance. Sometimes our life is so busy that we don't have time to do that. So we have all plants fighting for the space, water, nutrients, sunlight. Mm-hmm. And with that we have some big carrots, big plants, small plants, all. But with the square foot garden, we put the seeds at the right distance from the very beginning, and we only put from 2 seeds per spot.
Yeah.
So that as well helps us to save seeds. So we don't use our 300 seeds that come in a carrot packet at once. We just use a few seeds per spot. So that helps us to extend our seed packet for 2 or 3 crops.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. Well, lots of good tips. Any last word on this week?
Oh, this week. Okay, so it has been a bit strange. We had rain, and we have good temperature. It's going to rain again. One thing that, as a gardener, I was very happy that I don't have to water. That's one thing. The other thing is like, we already started our fall crops. Mm-hmm. As we commented last week, the deer came and enjoy the tomatoes and the beans. So we decide just to remove, harvest everything, clear that space, and plant again. So now we have already crops that like cold weather, and we still planted some beans, bush beans, because we still have a bit more time for them to grow. But most of the crops are just tending to leafy greens and roots.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us this week, Pablo.
It was nice to be here and share some of our part of what we share here with the students in SFU. And since they have their own garden bed, so they are able to use the seeding square and apply the square foot gardening technique.
Yeah. Great. Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Very quickly, how do people find out about Embark?
Oh, yes. Embark Sustainability has a website, embarksustainability.org, where we explain all our work that we do here. If you are more interested about our work, visit our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Great, thanks. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
What do you got for us to talk about today, Peter?
Well, the question is, for the first term, was the economy being managed by the Trump administration a lot, what was managed a lot better?
So you're referring to the first Trump term.
Which was 2017 to 2021, the beginnings of it, you know, the beginning of 2021. I kind of hesitated with doing this because it meant me doing a lot of research and so on. So I just decided to ask but the McGoogle the question, which you can do now.
Yeah.
So, but I'll be adding a few other things besides just what it says. So to the question, was it a good economy during the first Trump term? It says, yes, the U.S. economy was generally strong during the first 3 years of the Trump term. That was before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Featuring low unemployment and steady growth before it was disrupted by COVID-19 pandemic in early 2020. Pre-pandemic performance, 2017-2019. Unemployment reached a 50-year low of 3.5 in February 2020. That's the United States. How that echoed in Canada. Job growth continued a long streak of monthly job gains inherited from the previous administration. Now, this is something Adam has sort of contended that...
Your friend Adam, what's his last name?
Tendowski.
Got it.
He's been on the show a few times, yeah. Pre-recorded. But anyway, he contends that was helped out by the Obama administration, which actually got out of the Great Recession, or the that started in 2008 mm-hmm. under the George W. Bush administration. Yep. Mainly, I think that was kind of caused partly by the scheme to have everybody own a home. And
One of the things that was happening was the what did they call them? But basically, they would lend money to people who probably shouldn't really qualify for the loans, often at high rates of interest, and almost deliberately set them up to fail. Partly because whoever is making those loans would package them up as securities and sell them off, and they didn't need to worry about whether the person paid or not. They got their money for creating the loan in the first place. Anyway, carry on.
And also, in early 2008, gasoline prices went up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, was another factor. But anyway...
So we're talking about Trump's first term, though.
We are, but I'm just giving maybe a bit of kudos to the Obama administration for at least dealing with some of the crisis points of that. Whether or not they were doing a better economic growth, possibly. But they say here the key policies were tax cuts, deregulation, eased rules on the financial and energy sectors. Now, they say tariffs, impose protective trade tariffs, notably on goods from China.
Mm-hmm.
And he really hadn't done anything with Canada during that first one.
I think they brought in steel and aluminum tariffs for a bit.
But not for the extended extension they've done now. Now then, this is just what are the differences between the first and second Trump terms? It says here, first term includes traditional established Republicans, military leaders, and business figures who often act as internal guardrails or pushback against his directives. Second term, staffed inclusively by dedicated loyalists, political allies, removing internal dissent and creating a unified ideological approach, which is not that good, I would think. And I think this has been kind of a disaster. I mean...
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he's gone really leaned in heavily on things like tariffs. And you can see with this war with Iran that, I mean, they plowed into that thinking they were going to be able to roll over the Iranians pretty easily and get what they wanted. And what they found was that wasn't the case, and it's quite likely that, you know, with more independent thinking people around him and not just a bunch of yes men, maybe they would have given that greater consideration of not just what they hoped would happen, but some of the potential negative things that could happen, which, you know, a bunch of them have happened. Now he's stuck in a war where, you know, he can't get out unless he wants to just give up any sense of having accomplished anything useful for the United States. So now he's sort of stuck there because he can't get a win for the States, and the Iranians aren't going to give him one. And so how does he get out of it without really embarrassing himself?
Well, he came off that win, or the supposed win, with Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it could be easy to, I mean, just get rid of their, which winds up to be a symbolic leader, which means you haven't really done anything. But he thought that would have been a major coup.
Well, of course, you know, I mean, he should have known that, you know, the Israeli governance structure is quite different than what was in place in Venezuela, where it's very much, you know, a sort of strong man at the top and you know, a sort of party of supporters, but not the same as the Iranian system, which is much longer established and sort of, I think, broader based in terms of its structure, and more institutionalized rather than a sort of personal leadership style. So taking out the leader wasn't going to make that much difference. It's also worth noting that in Venezuela they took out the leader, but they didn't really cause regime change. I mean, the existing vice president in Venezuela, you know, Maduro's vice president, stepped up and became the new president with the rest of the same leadership in place. So it's a change of figureheads, but not necessarily a change of regime.
Well, the question I sort of have, was there an aspect, like if he didn't have COVID, perhaps he would have had he would have got elected again, I think, Trump, without COVID, because it seemed they would have had the continuous good economy, and maybe he wouldn't have chosen this irrational kind of action he had done. He would have left well alone.
Well, I've certainly seen a lot of people have sort of speculated that had he won in 2021, that he would have continued on with the existing sort of setup he had, whereas, you know, having lost 2020, then they had 4 years out of power to think about how they were going to do it different. And, you know, a lot of advisors said, you can't go with all these sort of established people. You got to get your own people, and then you can do what you want. And so, and he's really taken a very different approach this time round, like, as you said at the beginning, by surrounding himself with loyalists and supporters. And, you know, it's really become apparent that nobody within the regime or within the administration or that wants this administration's favor is willing to say anything negative about him.
So it's interesting that maybe, if COVID didn't happen, and now I know that it basically had come from a wet market in mainland China. I had other concepts, but we won't go into that now. Yep. But that we might well have had two terms. They would say, well, the Donald Trump reign wasn't that bad. But having survived an assassination attempt, maybe he just thinks he's invincible. Because he's sort of a man of, like, ignorance. Mm-hmm. He just, you can't really tell him anything. Like, last week I talked about aluminum and that he's totally ignorant about, he basically needs Canadian smelting of aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the United States just has a 43% return on aluminum cans. We got 71%. And so on. So, I mean, he's just ignorant in general. But he wants to have us collapse economically. And this is what I think a lot of people aren't getting the point. He wants a collapse of the Canadian economy. You know, he wants to take over Canada. He wants to take over Greenland. And this is what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got some crackpot concepts. Now, it's interesting. Tamara Leach, she was with the convoy. The convoy. She had a
trucker convoy.
She had a trucker. She had a July 4th rendezvous with who's that ambassador that I don't like?
Hoekstra.
Yeah, she was
US Ambassador Hoekstra. Yeah,
and she was there as an Uncle Tom Canuck with him, and she wants to get permission to go on some Rebel News cruise to the Caribbean and meet at the White House, even though she's under this house arrest thing. Now, I mean, I can't, you know, there's a saying, there's nothing older than yesterday's newspaper. Well, I used to be for these people. It amazes me just how, I mean, I was a bit, I mean, I know that the people I know and part of No New Normal and all of this, they're still protesting at 12th and Canby on Wednesdays.
About
their perceived imaginary problems. And they're all Uncle Tom Canucks to the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. I find that a bit, I don't know why that sort of went, one went with the other. I don't really know why, because I met one person that I knew from, and he was sort of mystified himself why they all had turned that way. But it's also, as I said, it's not just like, he's trying. They have this a pretense that it's about having a better economy in the United States. Blah blah blah. No. This is about us not having being able to do an economic takeover. Mm-hmm. And I think that they say we're the only recessionary economy now in the G7 countries right now. So he's done that to us.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so. I don't know. I don't know why the mainland Chinese government allowed certain animals in a wet market. I looked that up, and
just sort of a traditional practice.
I suppose so, but it didn't. It's not good. I mean, it wasn't a good thing to have happen. And sort of an advanced technological era too. You know. I would kind of, but it happened, and I had other concepts.
Yeah, or anyway, veering into the cause of the COVID pandemic is really moving us on to a whole new topic.
Well, I just think it was some animal. Yep. I'm just saying that it did cause trouble. That's my point.
A little bit of butterfly effect there.
Oh yeah, kind of a dangerous lobster effect or something or.
All right. Any last words?
Oh, well, hopefully something will happen good after. I mean, maybe he'll die in office. But they say that J.D. Vance will be worse, but I don't know. So, could have been better.
Really good outcome is for them all to be swept from power. But that's a couple years away at least.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday, you heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.